So this morning, I'm going to do a connect with culture rather than the usual what we missed in. I'll be resuming a series on that in a couple of weeks' time on the Book of Ruth. So we'll be looking at the Book of Ruth in a few weeks' time, but today I'm going to do a connect with culture. And first, I want to ask a sort of have I got news for you type of question. It is the odd one out round. Okay, so listen to the full question to tell me what is the odd one out. So what is the odd one out between the creator, the film, between an interview with Cliff Richard, and this song? What is the odd one out? Go on, Bernie.
Is it Cliff Richard?
It is Cliff Richard. If you know Have I Got News For You, they do, it's a satirical news programme on a Friday night. It's been running for years and years, and they have an odd one out, and they have a common theme, but there is one odd one out within that common theme. And Bernie has got the answer, because all of them are involved in artificial intelligence. The creator, the new Beatles track has used artificial intelligence with John Lennon's voice to make it the song that is, just been released today. And Cliff Richard was talking about artificial intelligence, but at the end of the conversation, he called it artificial insemination by mistake. So they all had this common theme of artificial intelligence, but such a fine line between artificial intelligence and artificial insemination. And deeply ironic, because it was Cliff Richard as well in the whole process of that. So that is what we're going to look at today. A little bit of artificial AI intelligence conversation. And it is entirely coincidental that this week we've had the UK Safety Summit on AI. It was E.M. Forster in 1909 that published a story called The Machine Stops, 1909. Which described a world that was run by a large, all-powerful machine, and humans lived in isolated lives underground with their whole lives mediated by screens in isolation from other people. 100 years later, 2009 and onwards, there has some kind of resonance with E.M. Forster's fearful, futuristic idea of what we'd be controlled by in terms of a global machine. And of course, those fears that were audible in this UK Safety Summit, because it was about safety and AI, about predictions about what AI capabilities could be in terms of the human race, and the threat of the development of AI beyond their, you know, capabilities at the moment. That has plagued our imagination for years, years and years. And of course, going into films, the Terminator series, you have Westworld, Wall-E, HAL, all those kind of things. And one of my favorite TV series, Humans, if you saw that. Humans was great. And so it's part of our psyche to have a sense of being threatened by another species of something which we have made, something which is beyond our control or could get beyond our control, and we'll be talking about that in a minute. And each book or narrative or storyline or film brings its own angle about what AI is. And then you throw in Elon Musk's comment this week that said AI could lead to the extinction of humanity if it gets in the hands of... Yeah, well, yes. No, it's the environmental movement. Because can you imagine, and I can just imagine this, David Attenborough with an AI robot who wants to control the world. I mean, Chris Packham, I mean, he's a nutter, okay? What about Greta Thunberg? She's gonna, you know, bring the planet to its knees. I mean, I thought about this, and I thought, what is Extinction Rebellion about? It's about rebelling against the possible threat of extinction by humans. So, Elon Musk. I mean, he's an idiot, of course. So we understand that. So we are all engaged in, and of course, you know, we're all dipping our toes in here that are sort of non-professionals. And it's a shame that Rachel Newman's not here, because she would be able to give us a little bit more professional insight into sort of the mechanics of mathematics and algorithms and AI, but we all interact every single day with some forms of artificial intelligence, whether it's Facebook or whether it's X Twitter or whether it's Spotify, YouTube or chatbots, QR codes, Netflix, smart motorways. We're going to go on a smart motorway in an hour's time. Lorna loves the smart motorway. Yeah. So they're not very smart, are they? No. So AI seems to be this sort of like subterranean world of data and formulas and mathematics, and it seems to keep life going. Has anybody used ChatGPT? You've used ChatGPT? Okay. So, PT. So, James and I were talking about this week, and we decided that we'd put into ChatGPT a question, because we'd talk about poetry and we'd talk about the poetry night, and we'd say, well, you know, will there be a time when we don't need to have, you know, poems formulated by humans? We could just put something into ChatGPT and away we go. So we put a poem, write a poem about human existential angst, and it came up with it. So I'm going to ask you now to tell me what I can put into this so we can have a look at what it produces. So what can we put into the chat for it to produce for us? Any suggestions? A poem?
Is Michael Houston a robot?
Okay, that's fine. Is Michael...
You can speak to
him. Can I really? Houston a robot. Okay, here we go. No, Michael Houston is not a robot. He is a human being. There you go. Yeah, it is. And not a hologram. So, I mean, I put in a question, write a poem about Leeds United. And I shared it with Lorna yesterday, didn't I? And, it was literally within a second. And we had this poem about existential angst, and it was just like, bang, out it comes. So it is incredible, the technology that we've got in our hands at the moment. And... of course, if you know anything about the basics of this, and it's all a big learning curve for all of us, it is the fact that there are two concepts of AI, one which we deal with in the moment and which we feed into our computers and we use in our phones and we have all around us, which is what is called weak or narrow AI. It is the patterns that it predicts, it is the behaviour that it formulates, it's the things which we do to get analysis and an action of formulas so it produces answers about things. And that is called weak or narrow AI, and it is basically a narrow field of an ability, what it produces in terms of information. What the film Humans and creator and all that kind of futuristic apocalyptic scenario is what is called strong or general AI. It is the idea that AI as it is develops some kind of human ability and intelligence which is equal to or indistinguishable from human intelligence as we know it. And to be honest, the more you read about that, the more you understand that actually there's a big leap between the narrow, weak AI we've got now and the strong AI which films are made of. And of course, films aren't very good at making anything that's less than sensational and plays on the fears of the strong AI that we think is going to happen in a few years' time. So, as I've said, most of us benefit from weak AI. And do we fear it? Do we get frustrated with it, perhaps? I mean, how many times have we been on the phone listening to automated messages or looked on a website for a phone number to contact our bank or an institution? And we just scream, I just want to speak to a human. That's all I want. Just give me a human, any human. I mean, they may not even speak my language. They may be 3 years old and can't understand me, but I want to speak to a human rather than a robot or some kind of automated system. And yet we live with the magnificence of what AI can do. Some people shout out, what other things, apart from what those things I've mentioned already, what are the things that we benefit from as a human race from AI?
I heard one where they put in all, like a million x-rays of, say, lungs, and they then put your x-ray in and it can go through all the x-rays to do diagnosis much faster. And
yeah, yeah. So the speed of analysis, yeah, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, disease and issues.
A news report about advances in medicine because of AI, and I think it's because it's learning all the time, so it's able to take back what it's learned and then come up with new ways of trying out medicine and then learning that as well, so it does the job a lot quicker. And also driverless cars.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be out in like 2025.
Yeah, yeah. Who's going to drive one of those? Anybody else?
No.
Well, something is. Anything else? Any Google Maps predictions, climate change predictions, all that kind of stuff about weather patterns is going to be really, you know, really important. So there's a whole breadth of stuff that we benefit from. But apparently AI anxiety is on the rise. It's a diagnosed condition. And we've got to admit, there is a sinister side to this without getting sensational, because, of course, we can just let the UK government do that for us. So what have horses, lift operators, milkmen, bank tellers, and meter readers have in common? Well, most of them all their jobs are obsolete or going to be obsolete. What are the next obsolete jobs coming down the track?
Horses.
Yeah, horses themselves. They were employed. Yeah, and not in your day, obviously. That was just a stone cart. And so who's next? Car drivers, said. Train drivers, pilots, church ministers. Now that's going to be an upgrade, isn't it? Certainly. There's no doubt about that. So we fear three things, I think. We fear, first of all, the loss of human value, the place that work contributes and the value of our jobs and our identity becoming obsolete and being replaced by a system or a thing or an automated construct of something. And, of course, we fear what is called surveillance capitalism. We all realise that we're being watched and we've been noted, cookies on our, on our computers, and everything about Spotify and being able to channel our behaviour, not just give us. I mean, I love a good recommendation on Vinted. Don't get me wrong, okay? It is hard for me not to look at Vinted and think to myself, oh yeah, they look quite nice. Yeah. But the fact is that is telling me, on the basis of the information of the search engines I've put in, what kind of lingerie I like, for example. And so therefore, we are dominated by this surveillance capitalism, which is leading us towards behaviour about what we do and our preferential habits and our buying habits. And so we are fearful of loss of privacy, loss of human value and loss of privacy. Did anybody ever watch the BBC series The Capture? fantastic and scary deep fake images. What is the truth? If you ever manage to watch it again on the BBC series, it is an incredible little series. And it raises all sorts of questions about the power of technology to change the truth and change the narrative arc of all sorts of things. And so the use of technology for violent purposes, nefarious circumstances, manipulating elections, manipulating democracy, changing behaviour patterns, voting impartiality, all that kind of stuff. So we are concerned about the loss of control. The loss of control is something which is paramount in our thinking as a human race. The idea that we are going to be eventually controlled by this thing, or it's going to get into the hands of a particular group that's going to be able to control and dominate and subjugate. And so we are concerned that one day we will yield human power to systems or people that have got violent, non-benevolent means and ideologies. So we've got to ask ourselves the question before we have a little bit of discussion. When does these tools, because they are tools and machines, become so advanced they become indistinguishable from humans, from us as humans? And that was a question asked by whom in 1950? Alan Turing, yes, Alan Turing, mathematician. It was called the imitation game, but now I think it's just called the Turing test. And he's, when I looked into this, because I actually didn't see the film, when I looked into this, it is a very simple test. The whole idea, if you're trying to distinguish between a machine and a human, he put forward a very simple scenario. He said that a human evaluator, that's me and you, would be able to distinguish a machine from a human by very simple, natural conversation and questions. And so he set forth a whole number of questions which he think would be part of being able to distinguish what is a machine and what is a human. Three of these include, tell us your most memorable childhood event that has impacted you. Describe yourself using colours, only colours and shapes. And then the third one, describe why time flies like an arrow, but fruit flies like a banana. And so these are questions which scientists and mathematicians have been trying to grapple with for years and years. And it comes down to the very simple question of what does it mean to be a human? What does it mean to be a human? And that's a question I want us to think about for the rest of our time. And I want you to discuss that on your tables. You've got a pen and paper. And I want you to come up with a list of things. So it is a conversation, but I would like you actually to put something tangible on your piece of paper. What you think it means to be human. And perhaps, what does it mean to be, therefore, made in God's image? What does it mean to be distinct as a human being, as opposed to the existing AI, but also the potential of strong or general AI? And then we'll come back to share some of those things. Okay, let's bring our discussions to a bit of a close and then we can report back now, because we've had some really good discussions on our table. I don't know about you, we've solved the problem. We know exactly what we are like. Anyway, who would like to respond first of all? Any tables, anybody headlines from your paper that you've got down that could be thrown into the mix? Anybody? Who'd like to start?
We got lots of positive things, but we also thought about the fact that humanity is flawed, that we have vulnerability, that we're irrational, and those things can be programmed out of computers, but they can't be programmed out of us. But that is part of our humanity and how we are, and lots of others. But I'm going to pass over to someone else. Who's next?
Great, Hannah.
You've written, like a lot of like positive things, but I can't really read the handwriting. But we have, we put down sense of humor, consciousness, emotion, wisdom, spiritual, judgment, institution, needs, desires, compassion, sacrifice, and that's what we put down.
Okay, great. Yeah. Sacrifice, like that one, interesting
Thank you.
One.
Thank you.
Denying yourself, can a machine deny itself? Yeah, that's right, yeah. Okay, anybody else want to pass it on? Yes, go on then.
Bernie said humans can contemplate their own death. Mm-hmm. And Akram contributed with, pain and suffering is something that maybe can't be experienced by AI. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great.
Is this one on?
Yeah.
We were talking about pleasure as a concept, like people do things because we enjoy them, not because of some predetermined logical pattern. And the things that we want to do can vary, like people get pleasure from different things. And I was saying about they use the metaphor of pleasure in the AI design with this concept of a reward function, which is kind of like pretending to give the computer a reward for doing the right thing. But it's very different if a number goes up versus human feeling of happiness and of pleasure. And of, like the metaphor is the same, but the material reality of it is very different.
Mm. Yeah. One last one, wants to share. Thank you. This is really all good stuff.
So we talked about a very quite difficult concept, and we came up with the phrase that it was reliability on human interaction and creativity. And Fiona was trying to explain that a robot could do surgery on, say, a heart operation, but actual fact, if there's no electricity, that robot can't work. And so, but a surgeon, a human surgeon, is able to do the same operation, but they can adapt to circumstances. So, for example, in wartime, people are still doing operations when there's no electricity. They adapt to the circumstances. I hope I'm getting this right, and actually sometimes it feels better as a human looking on to see that perhaps a human has failed in that operation rather than a robot has, that there's just that sort of reliability of interaction between human to human, because they understand the fears that you might have going into that operation, whereas a robot isn't going to understand that you're fearful going into an operation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you get that bigger picture.
I think put all that together, that's a brilliant sort of matrix of where, ironically, of where we're going in terms of who we are. And I think some really, really deep thinking in terms of what makes us distinct, and something that we need to hold on to actually as things evolve, but also how technology continues to sort of both give us life flourishing elements and actions and abilities, but at the same time it frustrates us and negates us and dismantles humanity and subverts humanity as well, and is finding that intention. I've just got a few things I want to say to close, and actually you've done a lot of this thing already, and I'm just going to a few headline words. First of all, I would, and in response to this, because this is all a learning stuff, and so I'd just put these things out there, and they touch all that you've said already. First of all, I would say embodiment is key to our distinction. The COVID lockdowns taught us, if it taught us anything, amongst all the things that it taught us, is that we need enfleshed, embodied relationships. And we talked about relationality here, we talked about friendship being a key component of what we need and what it means to be a human. And the incarnation of Jesus, of course, God becoming flesh, is at the heart of God's solidarity with humans. God loves physicality so much that he became a body, he became a person. And so he affirms bodily, enfleshed existence. And so therefore there is no Christianity without embodiment, and there is no humanity without embodiment as well. And so we can give AI a name, Ada or Alexa or Siri or whatever, or Julie, which is the name of our sat-nav, instead of giving them a X4230C, you know, doesn't sound as good, but Alexa will remain, at this current stage anyway, a series of algorithms and databases that are spread around the world or around the country or a system with no embodied self, no personhood. And a lot of our conversations are about consciousness and personhood as well. So I would say that. The secondly I would say is diversity. That human beings in all their beautiful diversity reflect a God that is diverse, a God that is mutual, that is God of three persons. And so therefore we know that AI exists in a sort of shallow remit of the data and the worldview and of the humans that put in that data. And they come from certain nationalities, whether it's UK, America, or China being the major players. But the diversity of human beings is a whole millions of people that is not reflected in the way that AI or robots are formed and made and constructed, because it's the data and the worldview of a certain kind of person in a certain place, but with a certain worldview and a certain experience and a certain kind of education. So what happens if we try and express humankind in all its diversity and the voices and the place and the worldviews? You know, where is the Inuit voice of Greenland in AI? Where is the Hutu in Burundi, or the Dinka in South Sudan, or the Kachin in Myanmar, or the Uzbeks or the Irish? I mean, you know, it is a breadth of human experience, and yet programming and AI and all that stuff is being constructed and made really from a narrow group of humanity, a narrow personhood, where there is so much more diversity to humankind. Secondly, I would say morality, and we talked a little bit about this, but actually not morality in terms of good, morality in terms of the ability to be morally responsible. That's what we're talking about in the end, is it? That actually Siri can't choose between what is right and wrong morally or ethically. That robots and AI doesn't have any kind of sense that what they're doing is either good or bad. And I love the emphasis on bias, because we know that machines do have bias, because that bias comes from us. And so the idea that actually what makes us human is our sin. You can't accuse a robot of being greedy or being arrogant or being proud. Any trait that is in those systems comes from us, those people that have brought that system to life. And so perhaps it is the fact that we need saving from ourselves that makes us human, that makes us who we are. Fourthly, I would say creativity, and we've talked about that already. There was an article in The Guardian magazine a couple of years ago now that said this: does AI need to make love to Rembrandt's girlfriend to make art? Unpack that one. So the idea is this, that AI can write poetry using Google Bard or ChatGPT. It can produce art like, hang on, go back to this. Ada. Do you know what Ada? Ada is the world's first ultra-realistic humanoid robot in 2019. And she has produced, it has produced art that has been in display in Venice and London. So we can have all sorts of art and poetry, and AI can produce music. There's a project called Deep Jazz, which was a project a couple of years ago that produced some jazz music in Confederation. And all these things, music, art, poetry, they're considered to be deeply human activities, creative activities. So, but does words on a page, pixels on a piece of art, on a screen, or MIDI files actually reflect humanity just because robots and AI can reproduce it? So, they can't knit. I'm sure Ada's going to be knitting soon, and you're going to be obsolete. But are they just digital recreations? Are they just mimicking humanity? Where does art and music and poetry actually come from if there's no pain, if there's no angst, if there's no love and loss, if there's no lament, if there's no joy, if there's no suffering? And we've already touched on this, and I think that's why it's so great, that actually perhaps not only what makes us human is not just our sin, but also our suffering. And that is where humans produce art and music and poetry from, that guttural soul-searching and the fear and the joy and the love that comes from living life as people with a spirit and, I would say, soul, but that needs, again, words need deconstructing, but with raw emotions and feelings of autonomy and connection. And then lastly, we can talk about transcendence. And transcendence is important. I put into chat GPT, I've been doing a lot of chatting with GPT this week, and I put in, apart from a few questions, I put, pray for me, pray for me. And it came up with this, I can help you with anything you want me to help you with. If you want to send me a message, blah, 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 blah. And then I put it again, pray for me. You couldn't pray for me. But I put in a question, write a prayer to God. And it wrote a great prayer to God. But it can't actually pray for me. It can produce a prayer, but it can't pray for me because it had no concept of the other. And perhaps in the world where non-religious secular systems and humans and governments are seeking to produce AI which is non-religious, non-biased, but produces equality and equity and human flourishing, which is a noble goal, is it ever going to achieve the missing thing within that which is a connection with the other, with something beyond itself? Because we cannot get over the fact that everybody on this earth that has ever stepped on this earth has always worshipped something. Human beings, as part of ourself, worship. And that is part of, whether it's an institutional religion, whether it is a machine, whether it is an animal life form, whether it is self or whatever. And that is the state of what a human being is, because there is something transcendent and something connection with the other. And so I would say that actually the way in which we even ask the question, who am I, is a question that cannot be answered or asked even by the current systems of AI or a robot. Because they have no concept, it has no concept of the other beyond itself, apart from what is input through a human or a human system. So that's all I've really got to say on this. Thank you for your input. I think it's good to carry on these conversations, carrying on being aware, but carry on also the potentials of what AI can bring in terms of human flourishing, but also being committed to the things that we know that we are, which is people that need God, that experience suffering, that need each other in terms of friendship and relationality, and also ultimately want to give and receive love as an act of compassion and mercy.